You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Hello and welcome to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. It's me, Dr. Kristen Lierley, OBGYN, abortion advocate, and somebody who believes that healthcare is a human right, not a political football. Crazy. And I'm not alone. Today, I am talking with somebody who has been weaponizing humor against political rhetoric for decades, Liz Winstead. You probably know her. Don't say hi yet. I've got more accolades for you. She's the co-creator of The Daily Show and the co-founder of Air America Radio, the predecessor to everything we're doing here. But what you might not know is that she is also one of the fiercest abortion rights advocates, activists in the country. She is the founder of the Abortion Access Front, which I still prefer to call by its old name, the Lady Parts Justice League. And she's the host of the podcast Feminist Buzzkill. Liz understands something that is so crucial, and it's something that we all need right now. When they want to shame us into silence, laughter is resistance. And when they want to stigmatize abortion, comedy destigmatizes it. And when they're trying to terrorize immigrant communities with ICE raids in Minneapolis, humor can be a tool to organize and mobilize and fight back. So this is going to be a conversation about power, about comedy as activism, and about what it takes to keep fighting when the stakes couldn't be higher. Let's get started. Now, welcome, Liz.
All right. Hello.
I'm so excited to be here with you.
I'm so excited to talk to you.
Oh, girl. Yeah, I just am in awe of what you have done and how you have changed the way that so many of us have received, have looked at news and information, because the old-fashioned political lens didn't work for so many people. But when you injected comedy in, it completely changed the audience and made it so much more accessible. So here's my question to start with. When did you first realize that comedy could be used in this way?
You know, I think I started, you know, I was sort of, people always go, were you the class clown? And not really. I really wasn't. I was kind of the class cynic. And I think that, I think I'm the youngest of five kids. You know, I think that humor was a way to cut through and give myself like a place in the family, mm-hmm. to like be able to say something, to be able to disarm my parents. And so I think from a young age, I kind of figured it out. But, you know, using it as kind of a tool, it started out, I started doing stand-up like back in 150 years ago in the 80s. And then I think what I'll never forget, there was the being funny part is one thing. The being funny part was one thing. I think that what was an interesting thing to learn and how just being funny turned into taking a stance on political and social issues was, you know, when you're a woman and you stand on stage, no one's asked you to be there. There is not a chorus of people being, you know what, we need more women with opinions taking the stage and centering themselves.
Right.
Never really the thing, right?
Still isn't.
And so I used to do this joke in my act. And the joke was, had a setup, but the punchline was, you know, I really think male Great Danes should have to wear underwear in public. And it stopped working. It was a fail-safe joke that stopped working. So I went to record myself on why is this joke suddenly not working? And I went back to some of the old recordings I had. And the old recordings I said, don't you really look at a Great Dane and say, you should wear underwear in public? Funny.
Mm-hmm.
When I just inadvertently started saying, you know what I think?
Mm-hmm.
Male Great Dane should have to wear underwear in public. When I started like making a declarative statement, a stupid declarative statement, the audience didn't want me to be assertive in that role. And so just using the word think, and I was like, I really think audiences are bummed out that I'm actually asserting a confident statement. And then I was like, well, if they're going to be mad that I'm thinking male Great Dane should have to wear underwear in public, I might as well say I think about things that are important. And so I just kind of said, screw it. I'm going to say my piece about how I see women being treated, how I see the media treating people, how I feel about issues. And so that was kind of the turning point in going just from being an observational comedian to being a comedian that decided that my observations were actually worth turning into thoughts, and those thoughts should be about things that mattered.
But then taking that and creating this vehicle that has turned into this legendary way that people now get their news. Before The Daily Show, it was straight political. People were being spoon-fed, you know, political information. Now it's this entertaining way. Like, I don't know another way that most of my friends get their political information. Where did that genius come from, and how did you recognize that this was the route?
Well, it was really the first Gulf War. And I don't know if we all remember the first Gulf War. We remember the second one. But the first one was really profound. And this could get a little spicy, but it goes back to a blind date.
Oh.
This is going to be a story that's an anecdote that you're going to be like, where is this going?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to tell you where it goes, right? And so I got set up on a blind date in New York, for those of you that are too young to remember a time before apps, dating apps. Your friends would set you up with terrible people, and it felt like they wanted to end the friendship rather than set you up with somebody who was interesting, because normally this person was a reflection of you, and this person was usually awful. So I'm in New York, and my friend Nan calls, and she says, you know, I have this guy, I think you'd really like him. I want you to go on a date with him. He's cute, he's fun. And I go, okay, have him call me. So he calls me, and he was like, hey, you know, got your number from Nan. I was like, yep. And I said, you know, the movie La Dolce Vita is playing on a big screen at an independent art house, and I've only seen it like on cable. I'd love to see it in a big screen. And there's a pause on the line. And he goes, isn't that in black and white? And I was like, why did she set me up with this person? So he goes, okay. So I go and meet the guy at the theater, and he's outside, and he is wearing a Yankees hat and a Yankees jacket. And now I have a theory. And that theory is, if a guy is wearing more than one piece of sports clothing, he's probably not going to go down on you. Okay, that's right. I'm just irritated at this guy. I don't know if he can keep it. So I'm just like, ugh, whatever. So we go in the movie, and it's so cool to see this movie on a big screen. And he keeps falling asleep. And this Yankee jacket he has on is one of those bad satin.
Uh-huh. Shiny.
All jackets. And so he keeps falling asleep, and he keeps sliding down next to me. And just, I was like so annoyed that he kept falling asleep that I took my buttery popcorn hand and I purposely was like, wake up. So I would ruin his jacket with my buttery hand. And I instantly felt terrible because I'm from Minnesota. So I was like, oh my God, I feel so bad. And instead of ending the date, I like went, I have to take you out and have a drink.
Oh no.
And he goes, okay, I know a bar. So we go to this bar, and it's a sports bar, of course.
Really? Shocking.
Yes. But sports isn't on because it's the first night of the Gulf War.
Oh.
And they have the TV on, and CNN is on. And they have replaced all the anchors with like hot anchors, and there's green lights, and the whole thing felt like a video game.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I feel sick to my stomach. are they trying to, and I literally thought to myself, are they trying to report on a war or sell me a war? Mm-hmm. And right at that moment, this guy goes, man, this is awesome. And I thought, we are being sold a bill of goods. Like, I had an epiphany. If you could ever have an epiphany, like, I'd never had a religious epiphany, but this was an epiphany that I could no longer believe anything that I thought, and that the media was in cahoots with the administration. And from that moment forward, my comedy act changed, and I started focusing on the media, and that focus on the media became, I need to not just do stand-up about how the media is garbage, but I want to do a satirical show that has the media being the media and talking about not only the people who are policy makers, but how the media treats them and their culpability in it. So that's kind of how it all started, on a blind date.
I'm not going to ask about the how it went after the date, but I do want to know. So you took what they were doing and you were crafty and you used it through a comedy lens to do the same thing for an even better purpose.
Yeah, to look like them and to sound like them and then to point out the hypocrisy in what they prioritize, how they're saying it, the guests they have on, I felt like was the best way to do it. And, you know, comedy done right is you become the most reliable narrator, because mm-hmm. you're always going to pull punches on whoever of either party mm-hmm. is being either dumb or trash or evil or, you know, despicable. So as long as you are calling balls and strikes all the time on all of the people who are messing stuff up, I think that's when you can be reliable. And, you know, it's not my problem that, you know, facts have a liberal bias. It's not my problem. Like, I didn't do that. I'm like, bring the Epstein files. I don't care if you have a donkey or an elephant, you know, on your hand towels.
Right. Expose them all. Okay. Right. So in the minute and a half we have left, you then, after The Daily Show, co-founded Air America, which is different, but the predecessor to what we're doing right now. That's the next generation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a story maybe for after the break, but let's just say that when you get a phone call from Al Franken and he goes, hey, I'm working on this radio network and we're looking for a Liz Winstead type to shape the content. And I was like, first of all, a Liz Winstead type. Why would you reject the Liz Winstead part? And this call is really weirding me out.
What is the Liz Winstead type? Did you ever get to the bottom of that?
Unclear. I think he thought that I wouldn't want to leave TV and work in radio because it was a startup. The money was going to be terrible. I was living in LA, which Al didn't know that I was literally having a mental breakdown in LA because I hated it so much. Mm. And I couldn't find work that was meaningful. And I was literally like, I might have to quit show business if I have to stay in LA. So I had to literally calm myself in the negotiations to be like, I'll come here for anything. Get me back to New York. So I kept my mouth shut and I got back to New York and the rest is history. And all of a sudden I'm sitting there behind a mic with Rachel Maddow and Public Enemy's Chuck D doing a radio show.
Amazing. And he didn't even have to use any of his like Minnesota mojo to bring you back, which is what I want to talk about when we come back from the break, because we have to make it a little serious about what's happening with ICE terrorizing communities and attacking the fabric of our democracy. So we are hanging out with co-founder of The Daily Show, Liz Winstead, and you are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and we are back with Liz Winstead. She is co-founder of The Daily Show, co-founder of Air America. She's done everything. She's a native Minnesotan, though, and that's what we're going to talk about here. Because, Liz, I don't know if you know this, I'm a gopher.
You are?
I didn't know that. Oh, girl, I was the
Did
gopher.
Did you go to med school here?
No, I went to undergrad. I was Goldie. I was in the band Pride of Minnesota. You like were I Goldie? Yes.
Stop it.
Can I be a like a Liz Winstead now? Does that
That is wild. You were actually Goldie?
Yeah.
I know. That is like okay, of things in Minnesota that people like want to have in their lives.
Yeah, it's
one
me.
Is their portrait made of seed art.
Seed art, yes.
Two, have their bust carved out of butter. And three, to be Goldie.
All of these things make me want the state fair so much right now.
I know. I had no idea I was talking to royalty. I just buried the lead.
I know. So, well, because it's not about me. It's about us. And it's about Minnesota.
Yeah,
because
right
the whole...
We are, we're doing the most, and it is... It is not even, it is not unexpected. It is, I've been doing a bunch of media because I live part of the year in Brooklyn, New York, and then part of the year here. And
she summers in Brooklyn and winters in Minnesota.
Yes. Look at me. But what I try to tell people is Minnesotans were made for this moment. Because you are just neighborly, you are built for, you don't mess with winter people in the winter, A. But B, Minnesotans are very provincial. So we don't particularly enjoy outsiders in the best of times. You know, like some poor person moves here because they got a job at Best Buy as a regional manager. And we're like, why are you here? Like it will take, it will take like 10 years to reveal your middle name to a stranger here. It's like, you didn't grow up here. I'm suspect of you.
It's so, called hot dish.
Yeah. Casserole's hot dish. So to watch two things happen. One, watch Minnesota grow to really embrace immigrant culture over the past, 50 years has been really kind of amazing to see. And then once you're in, you're in. And then to watch ICE show up wearing Carhartt, which is the uniform of the do-gooder, right? Coming in here with this evil, like they're literally like orcs in the Game of Thrones. That is what they are like. They are uncontrollable, evil people who seem to be heartless monsters. Yanking children away from their families, yanking people from their homes, from their cars, from their places of work. Not caring. There's not a worst. The only worst of the worst is ICE. These are good people who are our neighbors. And Minnesotans just are not having it. And we are not having it to the tune of, we will not rest. We will not rest. This is just now part of our lives. We can't exhaust us. We're Vikings fans. So
I'm glad you said it.
We do not understand defeat, apparently. We keep going back for more. And so what I'm thrilled about is that the world is watching people in the United States take to the streets the way we have always said. And Kristen, I think I've even had this conversation with you before. As Roe fell, as we've watched literally our rights disseminate, why aren't Americans taking to the streets? What will it take? And so to show the international community and to show Americans how it's done, that we actually will stand up to fight tyranny and that we actually think all of this is crap, I think is super important on like every single level of making sure we can somehow sustain this American experiment called democracy.
Yes, and all the different ways that it's happening, from the indigenous folks dancing in the street to the people dragging their patio heaters out to the protests to the music, the drums on the Stone Arch Bridge.
Yes.
I mean, and it's all captured so the whole world can see. It is so heartwarming and so beautiful to see how people all over the world, literally people all over the world, are talking about what's happening in Minnesota. And they're so not surprised by it. I think just to see these Vikings, these cold weather people standing in these really challenging conditions, it just, knowing the people of Minnesota the way I do, the way you do, you just go, yeah, those are our people.
Those are our people. And I think it sets an example to anybody else to say, like, you know, it flies in the face of everything this administration has said. It flies in the face of immigrants are ruining America. Mm-hmm. It flies in the face of trans folks are ruining America. It flies in the face of Minnesota's a garbage place to live. People do not stand outside in sub-zero temperatures with double-digit sub-zero wind to defend a people and a place that sucks. Why would you do that? No one would do that.
Mm-mm.
We have cable to prevent us from not doing that, and yet we do. You know, it goes back to that whole old adage, there is no bad weather, there's only bad outfits. And so yeah. I feel like we have it.
It, you know? Especially
also,
like,
this is the place where you can get laid with hat hair and chapped lips. So also, good things to know. I learned the hard way that's not the case everywhere you go.
And that, there will be more about that when we come back from this short break. But to get a little serious, this playbook, the fear, the shame, the control, that's what we see with ICE, and it's also what we see with abortion bans.
Yes.
So when we come back, let's talk about your abortion activism, the abortion access front, and why humor might be our most powerful tool in this fight. I am here with Liz Winstead, citizen of Minneapolis and co-founder of The Daily Show. You are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and oh my gosh, I'm here with Liz Winstead. She is the co-founder of The Daily Show. She was also the co-founder of Air America. We didn't talk about that. We like skipped right ahead.
I mean, we did a little.
Yeah.
But it was fun to, you know, when I think about going from, you know, Daily Show, and then there is an anecdote before we get to abortion that I think is kind of worth telling, and that is, in the piles, my job was to program the network, right? Mm-hmm. So I had to find the talent, put the shows together, and then have my own show. And so we got some really good shows together. You know, Mark Maron was on in the morning, which was amazing. Janine Garofalo was like our late night person. I mean, it was great. And so I had this show that they put me on from 9 to noon, and I didn't have, and with Chuck D. I was like, why does Chuck D want to do a show with me?
You're like the Martha Stewart and Snoop Dogg of Air America.
Yeah, kind of, you know? And so then they were like, and you have to have somebody who's newsy. And I was like, okay. And we went through tape after tape after tape. Everybody I knew sent me a demo tape of a friend they had who was really talented. And I had a friend of mine who was a really good friend of mine who left New York, moved to Western Massachusetts. He was like my first gay best friend, and he just ditched me and left the city and moved there. And
Aww.
He had a friend who was on the radio. I mean, everybody had a friend, right? And so I just had demo tapes piling up, and I went through, when I tell you, I probably listened to 500 people who I was like, no, no, no. And then I was like, ugh, there's Paul's friend, but really? So I listened to this demo tape of Paul's friends, the last one I listened to, and it was Rachel Maddow.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, no way, Paul's friend's talented. So I called her and I was like, hey, my name's Liz, I'm Paul's friend. And she's like, I know who you are. And I said, can you come down and talk to us? And she's like, I'm jumping on the Peter Pan bus right now. I'll be there in 4 hours.
Oh, wow.
So she took a bus from Western Massachusetts to New York. We met. She was great. And
the rest is history.
Rachel Maddow.
Yeah, brilliant.
The show with Chuck D and I don't know.
It's got to be so fun to look back, but also to look at the present and forward. And I really want to talk about the abortion activism that you're doing. And that's the first time that we met. Oh, I have my hat. Hold on. Here's my hat. So you were doing the Lady Parts Justice League over on Cedar Avenue in Minneapolis, and we had these hats.
Oh, those hats. That's right. Make Vulvas Great Again. That's
it looks like right. a mega hat, but it says Make Vulvas Great Again.
I still have that hat.
You put it on your profile picture, and we all felt famous. We were all like, yes, we've made it.
Oh my God.
But that was such a brilliant night. And for the, it was my friends who were there, all OBGYN doctors. None of us were super out because so many doctors are afraid to be vocal because there's so much ugliness in the world and we get attacked. I mean, you know, look at any of my social media sites. I'm constantly being attacked, but I can't. Right. Yeah. But you can't stop. I mean, you can't abandon your patients because as soon as we get quiet, then they get louder and then we lose ground. And how much more ground can we lose in this fight?
That's exactly right. I also think too, just like the bravery of who you are and to bring those people out, you know, part of what we do at Abortion Access Front is we want to make sure that every single person that attacks you or any doctor or any person or any clinic is put into a database so that we can finally keep count of all of these people who are out there in the world. And, you know, we travel around the country, we do comedy music shows, and then part of those shows are to invite the providers and the activists from the city that we're in to come on stage and kind of talk about the work they're doing, the work that needs to get done, and then to get folks to sign up to expand those supportive bases for you and for the activists in those towns. And through the course of doing that, the one thing that we found so interesting, and we're all over the place, you know, we're not just in like, you know, hipster places where it's safe. We were going pre-Roe, we were going to every state and in communities that were really hostile towards abortion. And what we found was, like, we would be, let's say, in Jackson, Mississippi, and there would be 100 protesters outside of that clinic. And the clinic escorts and the activists in that town were so familiar with these people that they were like, you know, that's Chet, you know, that's Coleman, mm-hmm. they live here. And then we'd go to Montgomery, Alabama, and they'd be like, that's Chet, he lives here, that's Coleman. I'm like, wait a minute, they can't live in both places. Like, is anybody literally making a list mm-hmm. and a database of these people? And no one was. So not only did we create the largest database of extremists outside of all these clinics, we started these undercover fake accounts on Facebook, and we started joining their churches, and we started joining their communities, and we started active listening as to where they were going and what they were doing, and started capturing their live streams outside of clinics where they were violating federal laws. And we started, when we had people on the ground, going there live and filming them going on the property of these clinics. And not only did we get 23 of them with our footage, help get 23 of them arrested on federal charges and then convicted, we found 35 to 50, it was between 35 and 50 of them at January 6th, and got to report them to the FBI. And the scary thing is that in the wake of Trump pardoning all of those people on January 6th, the quiet part that you know is that those 23 activists that were convicted on those federal charges for assaulting abortion clinics were also pardoned. And now they've been emboldened to go back to these clinics and really be loud and terrorizing and scary. And with this Justice Department saying, we're gonna look the other way at abortion clinics now. And that very charge, the space violation, this is an act that was passed in the 1990s to protect clinics because there was so much firebombing and harassment and doctors were being murdered.
I worked at an abortion clinic in Atlanta when that was going on. So yes.
And so they had to pass a law. And the only way they could get that law passed was to make a concession to right-wing conservative politicians to say, okay, if you want to create this law that protects abortion clinics, You're going to expand it to churches.
Mm-hmm.
Cut to 3 days ago, Don Lemon, Georgia Fort, those journalists that were covering the action taking place in a church have now been charged, along with some of the activists, on this law that was never meant for that at all. So that's just like, you know, you didn't ask me about that, but that's just sort of in the meat of what we're doing and what we're talking about and the work that we do at Abortion Access Front in protecting clinics. You get a win and then you get something like this.
I was going to go there anyway. You are listening to Liz Winstead. She's the co-creator of The Daily Show, Air America, and of course, the Abortion Access Front. Liz, are you surprised by the overlap between these anti-abortion people and the January 6th folks who are in cahoots to bring our democracy down? The overlap seems like it's the Venn diagram, pretty robust.
You know, I'm actually not surprised, especially if you know the history of the anti-abortion movement and knowing that so much of it was, remember that they're like Christian fundamentalists didn't really talk boo about abortion until Christian fundamentalists were forced into like when segregation was like not a thing and they were forced to allow black and brown folks into their schools and into their places of worship and all this other stuff, they had to find a cudgel with mm-hmm. which they could rally the white supremacist groups, and they used abortion as a tool. And you know, as we talk about that overlap and we're talking about Wisconsin, you know, one of the biggest intersectional monsters, a guy named Jason Storms, was a Wisconsin resident forever. He was the head of an organization called Operation Save America that came out of Operation Rescue. His father-in-law is a horrible man named Matthew Truella, who is an extremist. They both lived outside of Milwaukee. Jason was the number one fundraiser for Kyle Rittenhouse.
Oh boy.
For his defense. And he is one of the number one anti-abortion activists who is now part of another organization raising money to get anti-abortion candidates elected, but not just anti-abortion candidates. They believe that anybody who performs abortion, has abortion, should receive the highest punishment of the land. And if you live in a state where there's the death penalty, they are pushing for that. So that is, and to get candidates like that elected, he's been successful in some races. When you look at South Carolina, when you look at Florida, when you look at Oklahoma, when you look at some of these states, when you look at some of these laws in Wisconsin, oh my God, you're supposed to catch your miscarriage in some kind of trap that they've, like the stuff that they're purporting to do all over the place. It's terrifying.
Liz, that's my state senator who introduced the Clean Water Act.
Congratulations.
Thanks. His name is Andre Jacques. So I named the catch kit the Jacques Box.
The Jacques Box is amazing. Also, here's the thing. I worry for these politicians who are trying to conflate this there's abortions in the water thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're drinking water out of your toilet, I worry for your sanity and your safety. There's a difference between wastewater and mm-hmm. drinking water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's. If they actually cared about clean water, I think they would worry. They would like make the PFAS funds that have been set aside actually available. What? But that's a topic for another day, because I want to ask you how things have changed with your activism since the Dobbs decision.
Well, you know, I think it's kind of a twofold. There's a up till the Dobbs decision, right? Because before Abortion Access Front and, you know, Knee Lady Parts Justice League happened, the stigma and the shame and the way we talked about abortion was different. People did not say abortion.
Mm-hmm.
People would run away from it. So I think, you know, from 2015 up until Dobbs, we really did a lot of work really helping people destigmatize the way we talk about abortion. If you can't say abortion, how are you going to defend it?
Mm-hmm.
Like what, you know, and sort of asking people to do a self-check on, like, how do you actually feel about it? Is how you talk about it and present about it just been handed to you because the anti-abortion movement has been literally handing America the language and how we talk about it. So post-Dobbs, it's been, you know, lack of access has been really crucial. And so now it's really been helping folks understand why state legislatures are so important, helping people understand why ballot initiatives are so important. And as we watched in the 2024 election, even though we lost the presidential race, all of those ballot initiatives won. And even where Florida lost, they had a 60-point threshold that would be almost impossible to pass, and they got 58% of the vote. So I feel like pushing forward on that and helping people give them the tools to be the change they want to see has been very successful.
We know that Americans believe in the right to have an abortion. And I'd just like to add, as a doctor, a miscarriage is a spontaneous abortion. But more about that and Liz Winstead's podcast, Feminist Buzzkill, when we come back from this break. This is Dr. Kristen Lierley. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley here with Liz Winstead. She's so many things. The co-founder of The Daily Show, Air America. I mean, the Abortion Access Fund. It is amazing the things that you have done, Liz. But right now I'm really enjoying Feminist Buzzkill. Tell us about it.
Oh, I'm so glad. You know, it is so fun to have a podcast, you know, to have a podcast, first of all, that talks about all things reproductive health, rights, justice, and abortion. Because, and this blows me away, Kristen, there is not a podcast, there is not a weekly podcast in America that covers all of these things.
That are so intertwined, you can't untangle them.
No, you cannot. And the thing that makes it so crazy is the world has gone mad. And so many things that are so super important around what we're doing and talking about just get lost in the sauce. You know, abortion is just one big thing, but so many things, you know, don't make it to air. And, you know, as we are talking about what's happening in Minnesota, what's happening with ICE, what's happening with, you know, all of our institutions crumbling on a federal level, you know, the FDA and the Department of Health and Human Services is using, as we speak, they're going over a sham study that has been created by not a research organization, not scientists, but literally a website of activists who are combing through insurance codes and count that as using medication abortion. If you used an insurance code to access medication abortion, and then within 30 days of you using your insurance code to access medication abortion, you have another code in your records, let's say to go to the ER for a broken ankle, or let's say you had stomach problems, they are including all of that as a, oh my God, I'm losing
like a complication.
Thank you. As a complication to abortion. So what we all know to be true by all the scientific evidence is that medication abortion has so little complications. It's safer than Tylenol, safer than Viagra. We all know that. But now this study, quote unquote, air quotes all over the place for those of you listening, is saying it's actually 10% and it's garbage. So the fact that they would use this study that is so detrimental to try to destroy or vastly limit access to medication abortion is terrifying, and everybody needs to know about it.
Liz, do you mean to tell me that they are spreading disinformation about abortion?
Here's what I'm trying to say to everybody. Not only are they the earwormed, you know, monster who doesn't believe in vaccinations and drinks whole milk and eats raw meat and says there's abortions in our vaccines. By the way, I don't know if you know that, Chris.
I haven't heard that one.
I mean, look, you can't walk down the street without tripping over an abortion. according to Donald Trump. So I don't know. But yeah, turns out they're trying to dispel that. And so my whole goal this year and part of our advocacy on like on our podcast, just being able to give people information and having good experts on, we're going to totally have you on, but to have the smartest people in the world coming on to talk about abortion and what it means and what we can do and just exposing all the lies. I think the one thing we need to do this year is ask people who are brave, if you've had an abortion with medication, to come forward and tell your story, because with over 6 million people having used medication abortion in the course of its legality here since the year 2000, and literally having any serious complications tied to it, the number, I believe, is like 25.
Yeah. People. The doctor in me feels compelled right now to say that we have 25 years of evidence and science and data and experience that tells us that medication abortion, mifepristone, is safe and that all of this is a sham. And speaking of shams, can we talk about crisis pregnancy centers?
Oh my God, here's the thing. It is one of the most dangerous things for a couple reasons. One of what they do, and what they do is they've been set up by Christian and Catholic organizations, funded wholly, a lot of times tax dollars funding them. If you see ads on the bus or in billboards that say pregnant need help, they're literally fake clinics that people in lab coats that are not doctors will dress up. People who are not in the medical profession will give you an ultrasound and try to convince you not to have an abortion and then shame you and tell you things that aren't true, give you false information, inaccurate readings of your ultrasound. And they are a big tool of the anti-abortion movement. They can get your data.
They can get your data.
Get all of your information, because they don't provide medical services, so they're not covered under HIPAA. But when they present to you in a way where they look like doctors and you're giving them all this information, they can do whatever they want with it. And we need to be vigilant about exposing them.
The whole thing is a sham. I had a patient show up one time with an ultrasound picture from a crisis pregnancy center that was not a pregnancy. It was her bladder. No. I know. Yes, but this is what they have. Liz, we have so much more to talk about, but we're at the end of our show.
Well, you're going to then have to come on my podcast and we're going to have to finish where we started and start anew.
We will. Liz Winstead, I'm so, so honored that you were willing to join us today. Thank you so much. Keep doing your amazing work. We will cross promote and let's go, sister.
Yes. Thank you so much.
If you missed any part of our conversation today, you can find it wherever you reach podcasts and check us out on YouTube at Dr. Kristen Lyerly. Many thanks to our excellent team, Abraham Lyerly, our producer, technical advisor, Nick Tierman, graphic design by Nathaniel Gonzalez. We'll see you next week.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.